expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back everybody to the Leaf Glink Show live on Sundays. Here on News Talk WSB, I want to apologize for not being on the air with you last week. I have had the worst cold you can possibly imagine. And for a radio talk show host, when you lose your voice and it's still not back all the way, man, it's not a good thing. So I wanted to apologize. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms out there. I hope you had a really good Sunday. And I'm so glad to be back with you today. And you'll apologize if I occasionally hack and cough my way through the show. But I just did not want to be here. There is so much going on. And I thought, if I'm not here, we're not going to talk about it. And you're not going to think about it. And there's just too much at stake to sort of let this thing go. For those of you tuning in for the first time, I'm going to take a moment and just share with you that this is a show about real estate. It's really about homes. It's about where you decide to sleep at night and raise your kids and sink roots into the community. It's about where you decide to set up your future and how you decide to create that future for yourself and for your family. I don't think there could be anything more important than your house or your home. And that's how I've lived my whole life. It's the modus operandi of my career. My 13 books are all about money and real estate. I write a nationally syndicated column. You can read it in the local Marietta paper each week. 85 papers pick it up, about a bazillion websites. Did you know that if you just go to Google and type in real estate, about 7 million sites come up? Mine is one of them, by the way, thinklink.com. And so I've spent my whole career kind of helping people make smarter decisions with their houses and their money. And I'm so glad you've joined us today, because there is just all kinds of stuff that's happening that I think is going to make a real difference to you. I know when I look for myself, I find myself yet again, I'm on the phone with a guy we've had on the show before this week, Dan Jeldum. He's a mortgage broker. I've had him on the show a couple of times. I've interviewed him. He's just a smart guy. And I found myself asking again, for me, so, 3.25% in a 15-year, do I refinance? Every day, things are happening that make a difference to you and your house and your home. And that's the subject of the conversation here on the show. 404-872-0750. Invite you to join us, as I always do. 1-800-WSB-TALK. The website, thinklink.com. Don't forget to join the newsletter, because it's all about what's going on in the ThinkLink community, and I really want you to be a part of that. So, this week, I was looking at a new study that came out, and the study is interesting. We're going to talk about it. I've got Jim Gillespie from Coldwell Banker, the CEO. He's going to join us a little bit later on the show to talk about it. But the one thing that hit me about this study is that 79% of Americans said they believe the Great Recession has shifted their view on homeownership. 79%. You might as well just said everybody, right? Everybody thinks that their view has shifted on home ownership. And I can certainly see why, right? You know, you look at the big numbers and, you know, 27% of all people with mortgages are underwater with their homes. It's such huge numbers, right? And you have the lowest mortgage interest rates in history. I mean, more than 50 years, like 60 years. So that hits a huge swath of people. And then you've got, you know, as many as 14 million people could go through foreclosure. I mean, these are significant, huge numbers. It's real chunks of America. It's you, it's me, it's our neighbors, it's our brothers, it's our sisters, it's aunts and uncles and parents, and it's changed the dynamic. And so it doesn't surprise me, I guess, that basically 80% of Americans say all of this changing dynamic in such a short period of time has shifted their views on homeownership. But the killer thing for me is that 84% said they took it for granted. They took the idea that they could have a home and they could buy a house for granted. Like it was just going to be handed to them on a silver platter. Somebody was going to come up one day and just say, okay, your turn. walk through the door. You can have door A, door B, door C. Here's your mortgage. Here's your keys. Here's everything else. You deserve this. Like, it was some sort of automatic play. Like, you were entitled. That entitlement mentality was something new. When I started writing about real estate about 10 million years ago, around the time of the dinosaurs, people didn't feel entitled. I went to go buy my first house. I felt so lucky. I mean, I felt marginalized. I had this incredibly horrible experience where Sam and I went into the bank where my family had banked for 60 years, and they're like, oh, you're a freelance writer. Your income doesn't really count. I'd been a freelance writer for 2 years at that point. No, I'm sorry. It doesn't really count. We only care about him, the lawyer. It was so sexist. It was so demeaning. But I didn't feel entitled. I was like, oh, my gosh, I can actually, at age 24, buy my first home. And I thought that was amazing. I felt so grateful. It was such a piece of something. It was so solid. It was like we were starting a life. And Sam had already owned a home before that. He owned a little condo right near the Lincoln Park Zoo. And I would go over there for dinner when we were dating, and he would open the windows, and you could hear the lions roaring across the street at the Lincoln Park Zoo, and you felt like you were so part of that community. And that you own this place, and that you could paint it, and nobody could tell you no. It was an amazing, grateful moment in my life when we could close on our first home on Lakeshore Drive. And when we went and looked for our next house, I remember feeling like this is such a huge, amazing thing. We looked at, and I've told this story before, we looked at 125 houses, easy, maybe more. Sam thinks it was more, but I stopped counting at 125. I mean, really, before we found this house that we've now been in for 18 years. Sam said to me yesterday, we were in the garden planting, and he's like, 18 years. This is the longest I've ever lived anywhere in my life. We are so connected to this community. I am so grateful for the people I've met and the community spirit that we've built. And if you've listened to the show before, you know I give my block party every year because I feel that sense of community and gratefulness. I don't even care if everybody brings stuff, which they do because there's always too much food. But I'd pay for it all because the feeling that I get when everybody walks through the door and it's like old friends and new neighbors is such an incredible feeling. And yet, there are so many people who have taken this for granted, who felt entitled, who felt like they were owed a home. That somebody was just going to seriously give them a silver platter with keys on it and go, okay, here you go. Here's your house. I mean, wake up. This is the single biggest purchase in your life. Nobody's going to hand it to you. And yet, I understand. You're angry that you don't get to do that. I have been talking to people across the country, just like you, who say, what do you mean it's not my turn? What do you mean I don't get a chance? I want this. And I'm angry that I don't get to have it now. And I understand that. But just because you don't get it now, I mean, you look around and you see everybody else owning a home and you think, when is it going to be my turn? Well, not now doesn't mean not ever. It means that if you want to buy a home, you're going to have to work for it. And this idea that you can somehow spend less time picking out your new house than you spend picking out the color of your next car that you're going to buy, that's a true fact. People spend more time thinking about and planning for the car they're going to buy next than the house they're going to buy, even though the house might cost 10 times as much as the car. It blows my mind. Really? You have to work for it. Home ownership is possible. it's possible for people who, even now, if you're in your house and so far underwater and thinking about walking away, there is another opportunity for you too. There are so many opportunities in this world, in this country, for you to own a piece of the American dream. And there is no way that we're going to let the American dream die, because it's one of the defining characteristics about this country, the idea that we can dream big and then figure out a way to get there. Dreaming big is all about what this country is. When I think about this country and I look at what's great, that's what speaks to me. This idea that I could dream big. I could dream that I'm going to be on the radio. I can dream that I'm going to run a successful business. I can dream that I'm going to own a house that is going to be in a neighborhood where I will make some lifelong friends that will be meaningful and will change the course of my life and the way I raise my children and will bring incredible amounts of meaning to it. I can dream all that, and I can make it happen, and so can you. And even when times look as dark as they could possibly be, and I understand how dark that is. I got a letter this week from the mother of a Marine. He's already shipped twice to Afghanistan, house in Florida that he owns, and he's being transferred, his division is being transferred from Florida to, I think it's Texas or California. And he has to go, right? Military, you got to go. You can't just say, no, I can't sell my house, I can't go. You got to go. They're $40,000 underwater with the house. If they try and rent the house, they're underwater $400 a month. And the mom said, what about us? It's so, we don't know what to do. We're totally stuck. How do we make this work for a man who's serving his country and has to go and is probably going to have to do a third tour of duty? How do we make this work? And even in those darkest moments, when it looks like there are no available options ever, it can be worked out. Time passes and we can make it work out, and we're going to make it work out. Because that is absolutely part of what makes this country great. It's one of the things that I'm most proud of, is our ability, your ability, my ability, to dream big and make that work. And the American dream is so crucial to every single thing that we do. So when 79% of U.S. adults say that the recession has caused them to rethink the concept of homeownership and they are no longer going to take it for granted, I say, yahoo! Because this is a very special thing that we do. This ability to own a house. To have the vast majority of our country be able to own a house. And the rest of the world, you look at Europe, I mean, set aside what's going on in Europe right now, but the number of homeowners in Europe, it's like half. It's half. It's like 50%. We're, you know, in the 60% range. We were almost at 70%. You look at the developing world, sure, you can buy a house in Mexico. You just might pay 18 or 30% interest, and that's when you have great credit, because they don't really have the same system that we have. We have an amazing system here. We'll talk a little bit about that coming up. What do you think? 404-872-0750. We've got a couple of people holding. We're going to take those calls next. Jim Gillespie, the CEO of Coldwell Banker, is going to join us next half hour. You're going to want to not miss that as well. I'm Elise Klink. This is the Elise Klink Show on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
27 minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Klink. A little Donna Summer for you today. May she rest in peace. Very sad loss this week in the music world. Jason joins us on the line. Hey, Jason, welcome to the Elise Klink Show.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, ma'am.
What's on your mind?
Real quick, my mother has terrible credit, and I have great credit.
Now, how does your mom have such terrible credit?
How come, you ask?
Yeah, what happened?
Credit cards in the past, not paying them on time, building up,
spending too much and not having enough income. She's not in control.
Yes, ma'am.
And she raised a son who is in control, Which is an amazing thing. So what do you want to do here?
Well, here's the deal. She wants to get out of the home she's in, and I can understand that. She wants to buy a new home. Well, she doesn't have the credit at all. She wants to dig into her 401k. Well, excuse me, she's already dug into her 401k, and she wants to give me that as a down payment. And I'm actually going to buy the house as a rental, and then she'll make the monthly payment. I'm worried, though, that, I mean, my credit's over 800. I'm secure. I have a house.
You're worried about what you're going to have to do if mom stops paying the bills.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, God. So you have to decide whether you have the strength of character to toss your mom out on the street. I don't know many people who've got that strength of character.
I like to talk a big game. I said that, you know, mom, if you don't pay, I'm going to rent this house to somebody, you know, whether it's you or not. But I'm just worried about going into business or going into a financial contract with her.
It's a bigger issue than that. The question you have to answer, Jason, is can you afford this house with no money coming in from her? Because that's where you're headed. So
I looked into that. Yeah, I did look in. I could. It would crush me. There would be no, you know, going out to eat or what we kind of enjoy now. But yes, ma'am, I could if it came to that.
Well, that's where you're headed with your mom as your tenant. I'm sorry to say, with her history. So you would have to get it written up, formalized by an attorney. She has to understand that you will, in no uncertain terms, not jeopardize your future and your family's future for her bad credit card habit. And that if she understands that, it's written down, and she understands you are going to toss her on her butt if she doesn't pay up, then you guys have a chance of making it work out. Find a really good lawyer, Jason. Call me and let me know what happens. I'm Elise Klink, Steve Jim Gillespie, CEO of Coble Bankers. Coming up next, more on the Elise Klink Show. 404-872-0750. Stay tuned.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
38 minutes past the hour on the Elise Klink Show. Welcome back. So glad you could join me today. 404-872-0750. We are talking about the psychology of the home. So what we do on the show every week is talk about house and home and what it means to you and how we can make it better for ourselves, how I can help you make it better for you and your family, and sharing the stories of things that Sam and I go through every single day. And there's all kinds of stuff going on in our real estate world. Happy to share with you. 404-872-0750. Today, though, there's a new study out from Coble Banker, and it caught my eye this week because the majority of adults, 79%, say that the recession, this great recession that we are all still suffering through, has caused society to rethink the concept of home ownership. Now, if you were a huge real estate company like Coble Banker, you'd be pretty worried about what that would mean. And I invited Jim Gillespie, the CEO of Coble Banker, on the show to talk about it today. Jim, nice to talk to you again. Welcome back.
Elise, thanks. Good to chat with you again.
It's nice to have you here. So, you know, I know that you guys are a big, big, huge real estate company. So doing a study that looks at home ownership, not too far a stretch for you, but you took a little bit of a different tact. What was the thinking going on behind it?
Well, I think that we, and me personally, and I think that our salespeople around the country, you know, feel that, home ownership is something that's ingrained in America, and it's in our DNA. I mean, I ask people, and I'll ask you, you know, think back to when you were in high school, and what were you thinking about doing the rest of your life? Probably getting a good job, meeting somebody, a significant other, starting a family, and getting yourself a rental. No, you think about doing all the above, but you think about home ownership.
I had to get a rental because my mother kicked me out. My mother was getting remarried, and she said, she's like, you know, honey, you've been here a year now after school. It's time for you to go because I have a husband coming in here. I'm like, they're kicking me out. And she She said, well, you don't have to move far. There's a really nice place down the street.
Well, and, you know, and that's what takes place with most Americans. You know, we wind up graduating from high school, graduating from college, maybe getting kicked out because our mother's getting married. And eventually, you first of all, obviously, you get a rental, and then you try to save some money and get a family. And then eventually, your goal is, one of the major goals in life of most Americans is owning a home. And that's what this study has shown. And really, at least through the last 4 or 5 years, if you look at similar studies, Fannie Mae does a study every month. I think they do a pretty detailed study every 6 months, New York Times, CBS, USA Today, Pew Research, even during, this horrible, downturn that we've had, more people than not feel that their goal ultimate, it may not be something they can do now, it may not be something they can do in, 3 or 4 years, but the ultimate is to be a homeowner.
Right, but let me jump in, Jim, and say that,
sure,
your own survey found that 84% of adults say that more people took home ownership for granted before the recession, and the sense of entitlement, we've heard this before. The sense of entitlement, like, I deserve a home. Everybody gets a home. I deserve a home. But that sense of entitlement, I think, has disappeared.
Well, that makes sense based upon what we've gone through the last few years as a country. I think that, prior to that, I think back to my parents, they purchased a home and they never really thought anything about it. They didn't look at it as a piggy bank. And we sort of got caught in the trap in the early part of this century that people started looking at homes as investments, as something that we're going to turn around and make a lot of money.
And let's talk about that for a minute, because my mother, full disclosure, was a Coldwell Banker agent for a long time before she moved to Baird & Warner. She's been an agent for 30 years. So she has really seen...
Chicago area.
Chicago, downtown Chicago, Michigan,
yes,
Avenue. So my,
yes,
mother has seen the... she started in like 1983... So she really caught it when interest rates were still at like 18, 17, 16%. When people still went, people still went and bought homes. And today people complain to me because interest rates are 3.5%. And they're like, but I think it could go lower. I'm like, you're out of your mind. Just buy the damn house. So anyway, but when when she would be working with people, there was this sort of sense from agents across the country, stretch yourself. You're buying this house. You're going to make more money. I watched this over just so dozens and dozens and hundreds of agents. I mean, you're going to make more money, honey, so stretch yourself a little now. You're going to live there 5 to 10 years. You're going to make money on this house. That was what the agents communicated.
Well, see, I disagree a little bit there. I think that is what some folks in the mortgage industry communicated. Everybody thinks that subprime loans were horrible things. Well, subprime loans were good things, and they worked well for 10 or 15 years until greed took over. And what I, when I say about that, subprime loans work great. If you're somebody that doesn't make a lot of money, maybe, somebody that, isn't as well educated, but you saved your money, you could afford, say, a $100,000 home in a marketplace, which was way below what the median price in that particular market was. When greed took over with these subprime lenders, Countrywide is an example of that. An individual would come in, and the Countrywide mortgage broker would say, hey, I have this exotic mortgage product that instead of the $100,000 subprime loan that you can afford, that you'd be able to pay every single month.
Wait, Jim, I totally agree.
Loan that I'm going,
there's no question the pay option arms were a problem. We've talked about it. This show's been on the air now for 12 years. We've talked about that. But are you saying that there's no point in time where agents communicated? Because really, mostly, and this is true for sure, in the 80s and 90s, people went out with their agents before they talked to their mortgage lenders. And the agents, and I heard agents say this all the time, they still say this to first-time buyers particularly. Stretch yourself.
Well,
you're going to buy this house. You're going to be here for a while. Buy a big enough house. I don't think you can. You've been in this business a very long time. I don't think you can say that agents never said anything like that. It's just not true.
Well, I would never say that they never said anything like that. But back in the 80s and 90s, when loans, subprime loans were done correctly and regular loans were done correctly, if you couldn't afford a loan, you couldn't get a loan because there were no no doc loans. There were none of these teaser rates where interest rates were.
Creative financing certainly wasn't where it was. But I think the messages that all buyers were getting, and I'll say from the mortgage lenders too, I mean, they've got their fair share, but I do think that the messages that were going out all over the place was stretch yourself. And that ended up getting that message of stretch yourself, perhaps in a reasonable, thoughtful way, up to maybe 36%, you know, if you had 28 to 36% for total debt, when people still had 10 and 20% to put down. Well, the down payments started to evaporate. That message of stretching yourself, FHA, started to allow people to go to 43% instead of 38% of gross monthly income. All those messages that were really positive in the 80s and 90s when I, you know, was writing about this stuff, I think got a little bit twisted. And so it kind of all helped build into a bubble. And I do think that consumers, buyers, borrowers also have play their part here. They're not just, you know, nobody's an unwilling victim. You know, people have to read their documents. I'm the number one person who says, hey, listen, you got to read your documents before you sign them. But I do think that there has been a real shift in how agents and mortgage lenders and consumers, you just looked in your study at the consumer end of it, but I think everybody has had a real shift in this economy, because the kinds of things that agents were able to promise before, i.e., stay long enough and you're going to pay off your cost of move and the house is going to go up in value, I don't know that anybody knows that for sure right now.
Well, you know, again, I guess, you know, we just have to agree to disagree on this. I'm certainly not going to say that, you know, that agents haven't played a small part, but you know, quite honestly, if you can't afford a loan, you're not going to be able to get a loan back in the 80s and 70s and 80s and 90s when, you know, when I was selling real estate. You know, this whole thing started to develop in the early part of this century, again, when we started to come up with certain lenders, started to come up with these exotic loans and push the button on subprime loans, destined to fail. But when they did fail, this individual would go back to that mortgage company and they would say, hey, no problem, because your home has gone up in value tremendous amount. I have this new exotic loan product to sell you. Oh, and by the way, there's a prepayment penalty and all sorts of things like that. And that worked and continued to work until the house of cards fell apart. Then they would go back and there's nothing we can do because the value of your home started to go down. And that's what started the whole, you know, the whole mess.
Yeah, well, we can definitely agree to disagree about a couple of those points. And you and I will have, I'm sure, at some next real estate conference that we both turn up at, we'll go have a cup of coffee and talk more about it.
Absolutely.
I do want to ask you, though, what were you most surprised about in your survey? What was the finding that actually sort of said, that's sort of interesting, not what we expected?
Well, to be honest, the thing that surprised me most was the very high percentages here. You know, because one of the things I have to do in my position is really follow what's going on in the country, follow, you know, all the economic trends, and then also follow these polls that are done, these surveys. You know, I mentioned them, Fannie Mae, CBS, USA Today, Pew, and so forth. And those numbers through the last 4 or 5 years always gave me comfort that the American dream is alive and well. Even though people, you know, aren't looking for homes and maybe can't afford homes down the road once the economy turns around, because I'm a positive American and I know that's going to happen, those numbers, Elise, were in the 60s and 70% numbers.
Right.
This poll is very interesting because it shows many of these numbers in the 80 and some of them even in the 90%, a number which is very, very high. So that's
very optimistic. I thought that was interesting that it has become much more optimistic again.
Yeah, and the only thing that I can think, Elise, is the fact that we are now seeing, 25, 26 months of positive job growth. Unemployment is from 10% down to 8.1%. You know, we're starting to see, you know, retail sales, consumer confidence, things are starting to turn around just in the last 12 months. So that is probably the reason these numbers are as strong as they are. You know, again, much stronger than the other surveys that I've seen over the last 4 or 5 years. And that hopefully bodes well for our country and our economy. You know, real estate, this is the first time since the Great Depression that real estate has not led our country out of a downturn or a recession.
We say it every week on this show, for sure.
Yeah, and we need help, you know, from everything else. One of the things that's key, though, that I look at also is household formation. And going back 2 and 3 years ago, household formation in this country was under 400,000. And with the rate of young people becoming of age, household formation, according to the U.S. Census, should be somewhere between 1 million and 1.5 million every single year.
Yep.
Now, last year, the numbers that I saw from the U.S. government said that household formation again has approached, and I think it just hit 1 million. So what that tells me is that young people are starting to leave their parents.
Because they're getting married and kicking them out.
Yes, exactly.
Is what's happening.
Exactly. But they're starting to, you know, to leave their parents. They're not going to go out and buy houses, but they're going out and renting apartments or renting houses. And this is, as this is happening, in theory, then, the people that are renting houses and renting apartments, with the economy getting better, they're starting to be to buy homes. What we're missing in this real estate recovery is the middle. You know, people that the move-up buyer is not putting their home on the market because they're not seeing price appreciation. They're still seeing some surveys showing that prices are going down a little bit. And until we see that the move-up buyer back in the market by putting their home on the marketplace, that's when we're going to really see a full real estate recovery.
All right, well, we'll have you back on when that happens, which whenever it is. Maybe sooner than
next week.
Maybe sooner than that, because that might be for little while. Jim Gillespie, CEO of Coldwell Banker, thanks for taking a little time out on your Sunday to join me today.
Oh, you're welcome. It's always great to chat with you,
Lily. Nice to chat with you as well. We really appreciate your time. Go enjoy the rest of your day. 52 minutes past the hour. Folks, we got to take a quick break. 404-872-0750. I'll be right back.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
56 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink, 404-872-0750. I'm glad you could join me today. Let's go back to the phones. Mike joins us on the line from Atlanta. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Elise.
Hi, what's going on today?
Beautiful day, loving your show.
Glad you could join us.
I live in Raleigh, commute to Atlanta to work.
Mm.
Own a home in Raleigh.
What kind of a drive is that?
Yeah. Well, it's a flight every week.
Wow, so where are you living during the week? You're living in a hotel?
I have done hotel about a year ago. I switched to, I rent a condo in Midtown.
Okay. How's that going?
Pardon me?
How is that going? I mean, is it annoying to be in a rental?
Well, it's in a condo building that has limited rentals, so it's mostly owners. It's very nice. It works well for me. I work in downtown, so it's a very short drive into work every morning. I'm probably looking at doing this for the next 3 to 5 years. I do not want to try to relocate my family to Atlanta.
Okay.
Don't want to sell my home in Raleigh.
Yeah, I bet that's a little underwater.
I'm in good shape on that one. I bought that home in 2001.
Oh, long time ago. Good for you.
Yeah, so it's okay. I have no mortgage. The home's paid for.
So you are wondering, because I can hear the music, so we're running out of time. You're wondering if you should buy in this building that you're at?
Yes.
If you are going to truly stay there for 3 to 5 years, then I can recommend that you think about buying a condo, because the condo market is going to get sopped up. There's just a huge amount of excess right now in downtown Atlanta. If you can find something truly super affordable, like $50,000-$60,000, yeah, I would do it. It's less than it's going to cost you to rent. And then in 3 to 5 years, the market will have turned around enough you can actually do something with it. But better than that, you're going to feel like you're not wasting so much money by renting this second home. So if you can do it, swing it. Just be very careful about where you buy, because the nicest condos and the nicest buildings are the ones that are going to go first. 404-872-0750. Mike, thanks so much for your call. 58 minutes. We'll be right back with more on the Elise Glink Show. Stay tuned.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Whoa. Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. I am here every Sunday, 11 to 1 on News Talk WSB. We're talking about real estate and your home and why this biggest asset that you own, this big thing that you call a house, why it's so much more meaningful than just dollars and cents. And if my voice sounds a little strange, I apologize. I have been fighting this awful laryngitis cold for 2 weeks. Officially, it's 2 weeks and one day. And I've been drinking this morning hot lemon and honey. I've given up on tea. I can't take it anymore. I seriously have tried 25 kinds of tea in the last 2 weeks. And I'm sick of them all. So, straight lemon, hot water, and honey, trying to cut through all this stuff in my throat. So, if I cough a little bit, sound a little bit off to you today, that's probably why. So, I'm struggling to sort of get through this. But happy to have you join me nonetheless. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. And we're talking about what matters to you. So, last hour, we talked a little bit about this new Coldwell Banker survey. And it's such a striking number to me, 79% of Americans feel like their views of homeownership have shifted in this Great Recession, and they no longer are taking homeownership for granted. I find that to be that sense of entitlement. I don't know about you, but it really, like, raises the hackles on the back of my neck, because I don't think of the people I know, you know, in my employees, I don't think they're entitled. I don't think that the people I meet when I go on trips and I do speaking engagements and they come and they buy my books, I don't think of them as entitled. And yet, there is this sense, and there has been this sense, that mine is coming and I deserve. And when you're talking about something as meaningful as a home, it's not even just this whole idea of home as investment that we've kind of come up with, that Jim Gillespie, CEO of Coldwell Banker, was talking about last hour. You know, this idea, this view that we're going to put all this money into this place and then it's just going to return. Big ROI. You know, we'll get old business school languagey on it. It's just not how it is, right? There's something completely different about that. So really hope you enjoyed that as much as I did last hour. Let's go back to the phones, have a conversation with Douglas. Douglas joins us on the line from Jefferson. Hey, Douglas, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well, except for this little cold. What about you? Are you enjoying the day?
I am.
How can I help you today?
I just got a question. I'm trying to decide if I should refinance my home. I have two mortgages right now. One mortgage is for $100,000, the second's for $25,000. And
how long have you owned this house?
8 years.
And when you bought it, did you do an 80-20, 80% first mortgage, 20% second?
I did.
So you didn't put anything down on this property?
I put a little, not much. It was less than, just probably 2%, maybe.
Did you have an FHA? Oh, you couldn't have had an FHA loan.
I don't think it was an FHA loan.
Yeah, because you have the two loans. So you ended up with these two loans. Did you put any money towards the equity in the last, you know, 10, 11 years?
No, I just made, you know, regular payments on the house.
So how much equity? Well, you must be underwater. Are you underwater?
Yes, upside down.
How much?
I don't know. I mean, the appraisal, I had an appraisal done last year, said I was upside down about $3,000. Then I had another one done in February this year, and they said $17,000. So right now, $17,000.
That's a lot of cash to be upside down.
Yeah, it's a good bit.
Do you feel like you're really stuck?
Sort of, yes. It's an uncomfortable feeling, I can tell you that.
I know. You probably are up at night thinking, like, what the heck am I going to do? Because your interest rates have got to be pretty high on these loans.
Yeah, one's at 6%, another one's at 7.5%.
So I got to tell you, historically, when I bought my first house, you want to know what my interest rate was?
What was it?
11.75%.
I'm doing pretty good, I guess.
You're doing awesome. But that was a really long time ago. And when I refinanced, I still had back in, I think it was like, I want to say like 1992, we refinanced. It was still 8.5%. Now we're a lot lower than that. But, you know, the context of what a high interest rate is has so evaporated. The real question is, are you having trouble paying those mortgages with those interest rates?
No.
Okay. Well, that's good news, right? You're not late?
No.
So what do you want to do here?
Well, my bank, with the first mortgage, called me like around February and said, we got a deal for you. And they said basically that this company services my loan. Another company holds my loan. They said the company that holds my loan is having some financial issues, and they're trying to get mortgages off their books to free up capital.
And which is that, Ally Financial, GMAC?
More equity. Could it be the same?
I don't know. So they, what was the deal they offered you?
Well, there's more equity is going to give NationStar an $8,000 credit if I refinance, and then NationStar is willing to pay all the closing costs.
And are they going to wipe out the second loan entirely?
Yes.
Seems like a pretty good deal.
I think so. It's not a bad problem, I guess, but at closing, I got to bring about $17,000.
So they're not wiping out the equity. You have to come up with the equity.
I have to come up with the equity.
Right, because you have to get to zero, and then that second loan is going to go away.
That's right.
Okay, do you have $17,000?
I do.
All right. So are you wondering if you should do this?
Yeah, I'm wondering, because we really want to sell the house, but you can't sell. It's a small house. We're ready to upgrade. Not sure when that's going to happen. I'm just thinking with the money, I think it's probably a pretty wise deal. And I'm in the actual final stages of closing on it, and I just, you kind of just want that peace of mind, I guess, that it is the right move.
It's a fine move. The other way you could have gone, you're not paying any of the closing costs. You're going to get this done now. You're going to be up, right side up, and now hopefully you're going to pay this loan down faster.
Right.
What you could also have done is, if you were ready to sell, you just sell the house and bring the $17,000 to the closing so you don't have to do a short sale.
Right.
That would have been the other way to handle it. So now you've refinanced. Fine. You've refinanced, and now you don't have to list it as a short sale. The problem is you're competing with, and this is, you didn't call about this problem, so you can call back with this question, what you're going to have when you list your house, which is, how do I price it to compete with everybody else and still not be underwater?
Right.
And that's going to be a question that you have, because it's entirely possible that the house is much more underwater than $17,000.
Yeah.
So, but when you get to that bridge, you jump off and give me a call.
Okay, thank you.
All right, good luck with your closing, Douglas. Appreciate the call today. 14 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Marvin joins us on the line from Cartersville. Hey, Marvin.
Hello, Louise.
Nice to have you on the air. It sounds like you're fighting the same cold I am.
Well, it's just a situation, I guess. I get it. Seems like it stays for a while, and when I think it goes away, it's back. But anyway, I'm looking for a place to refinance. It sounds to me as if there are, and I have no way of presupposing, but it sounds like some of these radio commercials you hear, that they're strictly interested in themselves and...
No. Really?
And don't risk.
You don't think they care about you, Marvin? They do. They really, really, really care about you.
Do they?
Yeah, well, especially if you come to them and they can get all the fees from you. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought.
Yeah, you're right on the money.
We owe less than $50,000, and I was... we tried to refinance a couple of times, and they said, well, nobody wants to handle you with that kind of a mortgage.
It's not enough money to matter these days to banks. Like, as if it isn't enough that you have to have perfect credit and a perfect credit score and no weird stuff anywhere and all these other things. You have to have all that lined up, and when you line up, and then it's like, oh, you only need a $48,000 loan? Don't bother us. Go away.
Well, we have a very good credit score.
Mm-hmm, I'm sure.
And just looking for some place that.
Well, why do you want to refinance? How long have you had this loan?
Well, we had the house built in, 89?
88.
Yeah, in 88.
And so your better half is correcting you.
Yes.
That's how it should be.
Well, that's the way
see,
it is here.
It's my house, too.
Yeah.
So sure. you had your house built in 88.
Yeah.
Okay, so your loan is like 24 years old?
Close, yes.
You have 6 years left on this loan?
Yeah.
Why do you want to refinance?
Well, I'm just trying to save a buck if possible.
You're not going to save anything. You're just going to spend some more money.
Okay, well, yeah. Every time I talk to somebody, they say, well, we have to do the reappraisal and all that sort of thing, and it's another $2,500, $3,000.
You're going to spend, you got $50,000 left here. You're going to spend at least $5,000 to do this loan.
Okay.
$5,000 or $6,000. You might as well just spend that money to pay down this loan because you're not paying any interest anymore. All you're paying is principal.
Yeah.
So you're done paying the bank interest, and I'm sure you're if you've had this loan since 1988?
Yes.
So your interest rate is what, 8%?
No.
9%?
A little less than that.
7%? You the time to refinance would have been like
it's five something now, 5 7/8 probably.
Okay. 5 7/8.
Okay.
You know, if you were gonna refinance, it would have been like And it wouldn't have worked out for the interest rate, but maybe 5 7 years ago.
Yeah.
But you don't want to refinance now. And unless you're telling me that you would really like to have a little more cash. Is that what you're telling me? Is that you can't afford the monthly payments are getting to be too much? You're retired and fixed income and all that?
Yeah, I'm getting older, and I'd just like to pay for it before the Grim Reaper comes by.
You only got 6 years. You sound like you're going to live more than 6 years, Marvin.
Well, I certainly hope so.
Do you? So this is your what is a good opportunity or something that might be interesting to you might be a reverse mortgage.
No.
Okay, so you don't want to reverse because that would take away all the payments.
I know. I got two kids, and
you want them to have the house.
I want them to have the house in case they would need it.
All right. Do you have a chunk of savings of $50,000? You want to just get rid of the monthly payment?
I've got a little saved, yes, but I don't want to get into it because I'm retired, and with the health programs that are pending.
Oh, hello. I know.
Politics and all that.
Yeah.
I don't want to be flat broke when this idiot does all the things that he's planning to do.
Well, you know, there are a lot of idiots out there. So
I know.
The problem is you don't know which one, what idiot thing anybody's going to do, which is the biggest issue. But
yeah.
That aside, the big issue for me is if you've got 6 years left to go on these payments and the payments are starting to be a little bit of a stretch, there's a couple of things you could do. You can ask your children to help out a little bit with the upkeep of the house because this is their inheritance.
Yeah.
So you can say to them, look, this is getting to be a little bit of a struggle, and I can do a reverse mortgage, but that will eat into what you guys get.
Yeah.
Or would you like to help us a little bit? We need to do some fixing up, or we need to make these payments. I think having a really serious conversation with your kids about money is probably something that's long overdue for you and your wife. Mm-hmm. Have you sat down with them and had that conversation yet?
One is more receptive than the other.
Okay. So you need to talk to both if you can.
Yeah.
But if not, you're going to have to talk to the one who's receptive. So that's one way you can go.
Yeah.
And then the other thing you can do, I know you don't like a reverse mortgage, but you can do a small reverse mortgage, and it shouldn't affect the vast majority, but it would take away the payments, and that might make things easier. Or you can take a chunk of what the savings are. You have $50,000 left. Even if you took $10,000 and prepaid that, it would probably cut another 2 years off of it. So those are some strategies that you can use to try and make it easier for you, which is really sounds like to me what the real issue is that, you know, the monthly payment thing is a bigger problem.
Well, we've been paying extra on it for a few months, and you know, hopefully that will bode well for us.
Well, I think, Kevin, you know, you've got a bigger issue here, and that's, you know, what... How are you going to manage over the next 5 6 years? Because no matter, to your point, whoever takes over the Oval Office, there are going to be some changes. And Medicare is expensive enough as it is.
Yeah.
And drugs are expensive. And everything's more expensive. I know there's no inflation out there, but I don't know about you. I'm paying more about it for everything right now.
Oh, yeah.
So for the real costs of life that those of us have every single day,
yeah.
Those costs are going up.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they're dreaming or smoking in Washington because it doesn't seem to go up for them. But it's going up for you.
Yeah.
And so before it gets too far down and you run into a real problem, I'd like you to figure out which of those strategies you're going to employ because I think it's going to be really important to make sure you guys are financially secure over the next 5 to 10 years. Thanks for your call, Marvin. Really appreciate it. And say hi to your wife for me. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. Be right back.
Find her. expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, I just have to take a moment and say thank you to everyone who's been calling in with your remedies for my cold. I'm so deeply appreciative. There's tea tree gargles from Kimberly. Thank you. A couple of people are very worried I'm using lemon juice. Don't use lemon because it strips the membranes. Oh, I don't know. It feels like it's really helping, but maybe it's not. I don't know. Thank you so much for caring and calling in. I really appreciate it. I just means the world to me, guys. 27 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. We'll be back just a few minutes. We'll take more of your calls next on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Gling Show. We are here every Sunday, 11 to 1 on News Talk WSB, the number 404-872-0750. We're talking about house and home and how you make the smart choices every single day. The kind of choices that I make, the kind of choices that you know you should be making. And that's what we're here to help with. 404-872-0750. Nick joins us on the line. Hey, Nick. Thanks for waiting and welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question. We had an IRS tax lien on our home, and we lost.
What kind of tax lien?
It was a federal income tax lien.
Federal income tax? Okay.
Yes. And we lost our home to foreclosure, and the bank subsequently sold the house.
Oh, I'm sorry. When was that?
It happened last August. The house was sold.
Almost a whole year ago.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Curious. I read a nice article that you had in the paper a couple of weeks ago about, I know when you're selling a house, the buyer has to satisfy the tax lien. But this is a little different because the house was foreclosed on by the bank.
Well, the buyer, it depends what kind of tax lien, right? So if it's a property tax lien, that may be something that has to be satisfied separately. The bank, and again, it depends on what kind of lien it was, and I don't know exactly what, obviously, what kind it is and how it was treated, but typically when a bank takes a property through foreclosure, all of those liens get satisfied, or they disappear. So has the IRS come back to you yet?
No, not at all. I haven't heard a word from them.
Okay, and did your deck get wiped away?
Yes. Yeah, we wound up filing bankruptcy, so we kind of lost everything.
Okay, I'm so sorry, but the good news is that you've now had a year to start rebuilding. Where are you living?
We live in Palm Coast, Florida.
And did you rent a place?
Yes, we did.
And how's that going?
Actually, we like it. We had a condo, and now we had a house. We had a house for years in Connecticut, and we moved down to Florida about 8 years ago. And, well, we like it. It's going well. It's a decent price, and
It's hard to start over again, isn't it?
Well, yeah, especially when you're going on 67 years old. It's not easy, you know.
No, well, you know, the good news is that you could kind of say, well, it's the last third of your life, right?
Yeah,
you're
going
to make a change.
You turn the page and move on. That's all. What else can you do?
There's nothing else that you can do. And I don't want you losing sleep over this, because if there was a problem, it's been almost a year, I think you would have heard something by now from the IRS. So all of the, when you were going through it, that would have been a good question to ask. But it's been a year, and my guess is they're not going to come back to you, that the bank has somehow satisfied that.
Is there a way I could find that out?
So,
short of calling them,
you don't really want to call them and raise the issue,
no,
right?
I
was going to say you could call a local escrow company, and a local title officer ought to be able to help you. You could look up the property and see, but in your bankruptcy papers, it may have been listed and then discharged?
It was. We did list that in our...
Oh, so then that's what happened to it. So it got listed in the bankruptcy and then discharged. The only things that don't get discharged, really, out of bankruptcy are school loans. So if there was going to be a problem, I think you would have already known about it. which is good because now you get to just kind of breathe easy.
Yes, indeed. That's a big burden.
Good. Well, I'm hoping that that is how it is for you, but it should be. But again, sometimes it's a little hard to know. But if you've already gone through one tax season, you haven't heard from the IRS, it was discharged in your bankruptcy, I think you can breathe easy.
Well, that's good news.
All right.
Okay, and I hope you feel better.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm just sitting here trying not to cough on air. It's so crazy. 40 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Karen joins us on the line from Roswell. Hi, Karen.
Hey. I have a quick question. We're moving overseas for a job, and
where are you going? Wait a second. You're going overseas? That's exciting.
South Africa.
Wow, very far away. And are you and your husband going to be working down there?
Yes.
Very exciting. Yes. And when are you moving?
Well, he would go before me, so mm-hmm. I just don't know what's the best course for our house. I mean, we've never been, you know, like landlords, so I don't know if
it's hard enough to be a landlord, like, across the same city, or to start moving across state lines, country lines, hemispheres.
But the house needs work done to it, and we knew that when we moved into it, and so it's not up to par to really sell.
Uh-huh.
And, excuse me, I had kind of the same thing that you had.
We are all suffering together. I think I should spend the rest of the show talking about the remedies, home remedies that everybody's called in for.
I just drink plenty of water, and that seems to be the best. But anyway, he was saying that they're management companies that handle all these things for you, and you don't have to lift a finger. And I just don't buy that. But
well, no, that is true. There are management companies, but so first of all, is it your husband's job that's moving?
Yes.
And do they have a relocation package for him?
Yes.
So does the relocation package include any sort of home sale or?
I don't know the details of the package.
Why not?
Because he hasn't shared it with me yet.
Because why?
Well, he's overseas right now, and he'll be coming home at the end of the month,
supposed to make a decision or start planning without knowing what they're even offering? Because typically in these kinds of, in these kinds of moves, they offer something.
I know. I think he knows more than I do. He's just not sharing. And he will be going the beginning of June to just visit for a week or so. And I probably get a better idea. I just didn't know the pros for renting as opposed to selling.
All right. Let's discuss what work your house needs. How much work does your house need? How long have you owned it? Are you underwater? How much do you owe on the house?
We're not underwater. We put a lot down on it. We bought it for $472 in 06.
Okay, at the height of the market.
We owe about $230 on it.
Okay, and what do you think it's worth? What's other stuff in the neighborhood selling for?
This property watch dot something or another keeps popping up and telling me it's worth $419.
It's not true.
But I know. But the tax base just came back and said it's only worth like $389.
Okay, you need none of those are good ways of understanding what your house is worth. So what I want you to do is I want you to call a local real estate agent who sells a lot in the area.
Uh-huh.
And I want you to call that agent and say, I'm thinking about selling my house. We have to move to South Africa. What is everything else in the neighborhood selling for that is similar to my house that has sold in the last 6 months?
Uh-huh. Okay.
And how many foreclosures are in this neighborhood, and what are my options here? What am I really looking at, and what condition are these houses actually in?
Well, I know there's quite a few for sale in the local fours, and there are two.
But how many have sold?
I haven't seen. Well, I've seen two sell.
Two sell, a handful are for sale, and you don't know what the two that sold for.
Yeah, and then I know for sure there's two foreclosures that have been sitting for, like, at least 4 years. It's
horrible. That's terrible.
Yes.
Okay, so I'm giving you some specific things to do. Number one, you're going to go find the company that is listing most of these other houses for sale, the one that does most of the business in the neighborhood, and you're going to call them tomorrow, talk to the managing broker, say, this is what my house looks like. Who is the agent who does most of the sales for homes that are similar to mine in this neighborhood? And that's who I want to talk to. So you're going to make an appointment, you're going to go over it, and you're going to have a conversation. So when your husband comes home, you've got real information to share back with him. And this way, you know more than he does about something. He knows more about the relocation package. You're going to know more about the real estate market.
Yeah, I think he's thinking that he just, if he waits it out 4 or 5 years and comes back, that, you know, that
okay, and
he'll
that's
have more to show for it.
Okay, well, you know, maybe, maybe not. Okay,
yeah,
maybe, maybe not. So now let's look at worst-case scenarios instead of pipe dreams.
Okay.
Maybe in your neighborhood it's going to be fabulous, and maybe it's not. So let's find out some real information. So you're going to call the agency, managing broker. Managing broker is going to put you in touch with an agent. You're going to make an appointment. You're going to go in and sit down, or rather have the agent come to your house and take a tour.
Okay.
And you want to know what other homes are selling for in the neighborhood and what the condition is that they're in. And then you're going to find that out. And you want to know what has sold, not just what's on the market, what has sold.
Okay.
And then what you're going to do is make a list of everything that has to be done in your house to bring it up to the standard that will get the house actually sold, and you're going to go find out how much that's going to cost to do.
Okay.
Not an estimate. You're going to hire a real guy to come in, a couple of different people, and give you real estimates, and you're going to really know details down. So when your husband comes down at the end of the month, he comes home, you're going to say, okay, here's what I've learned about our neighborhood. Here's what has to be done in our house. This is how much it's going to cost. Now we can actually make a decision, because if we rent it out, we still have to do X, Y, and Z. Here's what it's going to cost for a management company. You can ask the agent who comes over to give you the name of the management company that they like, that they trust, that they use for other clients, and go interview that one and a couple of others and find out what it's going to cost you. And you'll find out it's going to cost you about 10%. Usually 1 month's rent and 10% to actually actively manage it. You're going to be out of the country. So unless you've got a sister or brother, you're going to have to get that done. So all of those pieces of information are things you need to know.
And plus, I worry about that renters are going to destroy my house.
Yeah, well, you can count on some damage, but you might, if you screen very carefully. You know, Sam and I have rental property. We've had, you know, for the most part, it's a more expensive property we're renting out in Evanston, Illinois, and we've had very lovely tenants. Still means we have to polish the floors and paint the walls.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so it's not like it won't cost you something, but if you can more or less cover your costs, you may say, you know what, our property's only worth $250 right now, and if we tried to sell it, you don't know. It might be. You're going to find that out. And so you're going to say to your husband, here's all the information I find out, and you'll type up a little report for him. And you'll say, this is what I know.
Okay.
Now let's make a decision about what we're going to do. And I think what you're going to decide is if the house is worth in the $300,000, you're going to try and sell it. You're going to fix it up and sell it, because you're moving away for 3 to 5 years, and lots of things can happen in 3 to 5 years. Like, you're not even going to come back to Atlanta.
That sounds like great advice. Thank you so much.
You are welcome, Karen. Let me know what happens, okay?
Thank you. Bye-bye.
47 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Michael joins us on the line. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm fine. How about yourself?
You know,
I know how you are.
You know how I am, because I've been complaining about this cold all during the entire show. So hopefully by next week it's all better.
I hope so, too.
Thank you. What's going on?
A quick question. I'm retired. We're blessed in that we could pay off the mortgage anytime we wanted to on our house. I was wondering if you could give us the pros and cons of paying off the mortgage. My wife wants the mortgage paid off just for a security feeling. It is such cheap money right now.
What are you at? What's your interest rate at?
It's currently about 4.75.
So how much do you have in there?
3.50. The balance is 3.50.
Okay, here's what I think you should do. I think you should split the difference. I think what you should do is refinance your house on a 10-year or a 15-year at like 3%. And you don't have to refinance all of it, since you could pay it off. You could refinance like, say, 275. So she feels like you're getting some of that paid off, but this is such cheap money, to your point, that you just want to, if you can just pay 3% on it, you know that in the next couple of years there are going to be incredible opportunities to invest that cash. And as a person who's retired, I would never say to you, put all of your cash in your house. It's not a smart move. So I would definitely refinance some of it. It's going to take down your monthly payment, and now you're going to have all this money to invest, and you're not paying 4.75% anymore. You've cut that down.
Okay, good idea. And because the way I look at it is, with the tax write-off of the interest, of course, we don't know how long we're going to have that anymore, but the tax write-off plus the what I can make in the market,
yeah.
I'm much better off.
Much better off.
I appreciate what you're saying. What we're doing is striking a balance between my wife and myself.
You know what? You got to live with her, right?
Absolutely.
She's your better half. You want her to be comfortable.
Without question, she's my better half. But
so,
you'll be the first one to admit that finances is not her forte because it's not her interest, and I understand it completely, but I want her to feel secure.
Right. So, but you also know that you can make more with that money. But wouldn't you rather pay 3% than, you know, 4.75? I would, because that could be the difference between making more money or less money in the market. Right?
Well, that's true, yeah.
So you're, and plus, by starting the clock again, but at a shorter period of time, you're maximizing whatever deduction is left for however long that deduction exists. So I think you both win, is what I'm trying to say here. So I don't know if the right number's 300, and you're saying, honey, I'm paying off $50,000 because I want you to feel comfortable, and I'm paying less in the interest, so that's not going to be an issue. It's easier for us to make this payment. We're going to pay this off faster, so you get a whole bunch, and then you get the cash in the bank.
As you're well aware, that, you know, the interest rates are all-time low right now because with the interest rate...
I know.
My question is this. Why not this? Why not refinance at 30 years, pay the additional principal every month, and that way we're not committed to a larger, mortgage payment if something went awry.
I think that that's interesting. The problem is there's no point in doing that because you're not going to get. It's really not 3.5% for a 30-year fixed. I mean, it is. But there's some costs associated. It's probably more like 3.75% to 4%. It'll depend. I mean, you could do that. I just, you know, 30-year, starting the clock ticking at a 30-year loan when you're retiring.
If I didn't have the money,
you could pay it all off. I know you can pay it all off. It just kills me to pay the extra percent in income, but in interest. But sure, go ahead, do a 30-year loan. That's not going to make your wife feel much better, though.
I see what you're saying. I understand. I guess the only way it would make my wife feel better if I committed to pay additional principal every month.
Oh, well, then if you want to, if you think that that mind game works better for her, obviously, you're married to her, and you could do that, and just a couple of extra payments a year, and you're going to get to where you would be with a 15-year loan. So you could certainly do it that way if that's going to make her feel more comfortable. I thought financing it for a little bit less money, maybe a little bit better, but... I'm good either way you go, Michael. 52 minutes past the hour. We have to go to traffic. I'm Elise Klink. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining me for a great show today. 404-872-0750, the Elise Glink Show. Don't forget to sign up online, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. You must sign up for the free weekly newsletter. It is your key to everything going on in the ThinkGlink community. We have all kinds of extra information each week. Comes out on Thursday morning so that you are ready with information to start shopping and hunting around. Over the weekend. We hope you enjoy that. Big news. We put up a whole bunch of ebooks on Amazon.com. If you're interested in our ebooks, and I know we used to have them on thinklink.com, we don't have a store there anymore. Instead, we have put up, I think, 6 ebooks, including 5 ebooks on investing in real estate. And the ebooks, you can get all of them. I think it's $2.99. We put them up at this incredible introductory price. The other, if you want to buy them individually, I think they're 99 cents each, but it's $2.99 for all of them. And then there's the Clutter Collector, and you can get that too for 99 cents. So Sam has decreed the ebooks will be 99 cents, $2.99 if you want to get the 6-pack or 5-pack or whatever it is. You can go to Amazon.com or in any search engine, just type in my name with Amazon and books, and the whole thing will just pop right up. Or go to Amazon.com and type in my name, G-L-I-N-K, and the Elise Glink page should pop up. And you should be able to see where the e-books are as well. So we'll talk about that in this week's newsletter as well. But you're the first people to hear about it. The e-books are up at Amazon, and we're going to put a whole bunch more there as well. Thank you for joining me today. Find me online, thinklink.com. Don't forget to tweet. We've been tweeting during the show, and happy to have you join us there as well. Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy this beautiful weather. I'm going out into the sunshine. Talk to you next week.